Oh yeah, I'm on the prowl. Hey everybody, Chef Christo here. Another exciting week of the Chef Christo Radio Show on Brilliant Ideas Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio. How's everybody doing out there? I'll pause and let you all respond. That's great.
I don't know how many of you got up to look at the red moon this morning. It was visible here in New York, I believe, around 5 a.m. But it was really cloudy, and we couldn't see it. And now it's nice and crystal clear, and true blue skies outside. So that's just all messed up, because I was up sort of early. Probably could have caught some of it. But it was cloudy and rainy all night long. Anyway, we are just rolling our way into fall faster than ever. I don't know if any of you have gone apple picking yet. That's a real popular thing to do here for us in the Northeast. There's a lot of apple orchards around, and the apple orchards set up things, and they set up their little orchards to attract people to come out and pick the apples. They'll have hay rides, and some of them have animals and things like that, like goats and sheep and little piglets and chickens. So they'll have a sort of a petting zoo for the children and adults, too. Everybody likes to check out the animals. So apple picking is a real popular thing. I used to do it a lot when my son was little, and he enjoyed it. But now maybe he'll get back around and into it again. I don't know. He's 16 years old right now. He's just way too cool to go apple picking with me. And I guess I'm just not cool enough for him to bring his friends along. So we'll see what happens on that frontier. And typically whenever I've gone apple picking, we've learned our little lesson about the apple picking. And we've taken our baskets and we've walked around from tree to tree to tree, picking what we determined at that time was the best looking apple on that tree. And you do that, and you find yourself way out there in the orchard somewhere with nice, big, heavy basket full of apples. And if you're lucky enough and you're near the trail that the little tractor with the trailer comes along and picks people up, well, then you can just walk to that trail and put your basket on the trailer and hop on and ride back in. But if you're the real connoisseur of the ultimate apple, you've wandered way away from the trail, and you've got a really heavy basket of apples. Well, that doesn't make much sense after a while. I figured out that all we're going to do and all we do anymore is we walk around enjoying the orchard, taking the occasional perfect apple off the tree, eating that apple, savoring that moment, wandering as far as we want, then wandering back, riding the little trailer in or not riding the little trailer in, not burdened by a big, heavy basket of apples. And then what do? We go to those bins that they have there, right there at the entrance as you're leaving the exit. They pick tons of apples. They pick them every single day. You can go through that bin, and any of those bins, there's a number of them depending on the variety of apples that they have, and you can pick out perfect apples from those bins. Load up your basket right there at the register with absolutely beautiful, perfect apples. Then you pay for them, put them in your vehicle, and you don't have to lug them all over the orchard. So there's a little tip for you when you go apple picking. You can get the basket, and you can carry it around. It's fun, I guess. It gets heavy. Or be like me, a lazy New Yorker, and just get them out of the bin before you go. So there's a little apple tip for you. Anybody wants to call in, the number is 714-242-5272. Today we're going to be talking about plating food. It's going to be a complicated thing to try to describe plating food on the radio. But I'm going to try to do that a little bit. I'm going to give a little history of it. I'm going to try to explain some of the ideas behind how you do it. I'm going to mention terms like Fibonacci and things like that. The whole thing about threes, where you just compose. It's an artist thing, composition, painterly thing that people do. But before we do that, we talk about what's in season right now. And the seasonal food of the week for this week just happens to be butternut squash. And if you were listening last week, you would have heard me give a recipe for butternut squash soup. It's a very simple recipe. Go back and listen previous shows if you haven't listened, if you haven't caught up yet. There's a lot of information in there, little snippets, little nuggets, little morsels, little bits of good info there. Go back and listen to previous shows. In fact, listen to all of the Brilliant Ideas radio shows. You'll hear a lot of good stuff. There's other hosts. I'm not the only one. I'm part of a little bit of a team here, even though we all fly solo. It's kind of like golf, I guess. You know, you are playing by yourself. It is, but you can't really win unless you're playing against other people. It's not like it's a winning thing here or anything, but it is one of those sorts of sports that you just go out there all by yourself and you play. But if you're in a tournament or something, you need the other players in order to have that. So we're like a golf team, I guess. We're just a bunch of individual golfers out there on the links, the radial links of life. God, I'm just so full of those correlations. I just tie things together so easily. Golf, foodie, radio. There you go. Right there. I'm like Deepak Chopra. Okay. So there's a lot of other things. Same things are in season. Seasonal things stay seasonal for quite a while. So if you know, you find that I'm repeating the artichokes and beets and butternut squash soup, and cauliflowers are starting to are popping up now a lot more. You're going to see varieties of cauliflowers out there that people have. There's a Romanesco thing that's interesting. It's like it looks artistic. It's like it's a cauliflower, but it's got such a unique shape and color to it. The little conical points, they look like miniature, teeny tiny little Christmas trees poking out of what looks like a cauliflower. Those are really cool. If you can find those in your farmer's markets, I would definitely pick them up. Anyway, so let's just jump into plating idea and the whole Fibonacci concept. It's going to be really difficult to try to explain. But if you see like a nautilus shell and how it coils around, Fibonacci is exactly that. It's the larger portion that swirls around into the tinier portions. And if you're making art, they teach people this in painting and composition, you want to have those areas broken up like that. You want to have a large area sort of working its way into a smaller area as you draw your eye inward. I mentioned the Romanesco thing. If you look at sunflowers, if you look in nature, you will see this spiraling thing, spiraling shape, in just about, and you'll see it in everything. It's in a sunflower. It's all over nature. So it's there. And those are the things, when you look at them, that are pleasing to your eye. You see this sort of thing, and you just naturally are drawn to it because it's just it's pleasing. It looks comfortable. You're not annoyed by how it's looking. And if you think about that when you're putting your food on a plate, then it's going to make your food look that much more delicious. So however flavorful you know that it probably is, when you plate it up, it also has to look delicious so that people are fully pleased. So Fibonacci, it's the Fibonacci, just in case any of you want to look it up. Fibonacci, look that up, try to understand it, and then think about that when you're doing your plating. Negative space is also very important. You know, how much white space you leave on your plate versus how much you're covering things up. You know, I mean, if it's a bowl of rigatoni with some sauce, of course you're going to just, you know, put a bowl of rigatoni with some sauce. But anyway, there's a history behind plating food. It goes way back. There's chefs, you know, if you've studied this at all, there's famous chefs throughout history that are credited with being, you know, the creators of a lot of these things that we do now. If you've studied it all, there's Carême. Marie-Antoine Carême. He is considered to be the first celebrity chef, for example. He was around from 1784, and he died in 1833. But he is often thought and given the credit to bringing plating into the modern world. So he's given that title of having done that. He studied architecture. He was just an amateur student of architecture, and he just would look at food and his plating in that particular way. So he would do that. He was the chef for a lot of people out there. Napoleon Bonaparte, for one. He's given he's believed to have invented the croquembouche, which is that tall Christmas tree-like pastry dish with the puff pastries and little swirls of sugar all around it, stacked up like that. So he would often stack his food and create architectural little monuments and little things and pyramids when he was doing his food. And at that time, that was, you know, that was quite something. Now you go out to eat and you see that all the time, the stacking. That's a common thing that people will do, the stacking. They'll put a sauce down, then they'll put their starch, and if they're having a veggie, maybe they'll put the veggie down, and then they'll put the protein on top of that, and then they'll garnish up from there, whether it's with some fried crispy leeks or some sort of microgreen or something, and they stack it up in that manner, and it becomes like a little tiny monument, sort of, a little stack. The stacking is a real popular way. If you've been keeping up with any of this and you've been noticing more and more, chefs are now doing a lot looser plating, a lot looser presentations. So they're sort of taking the food and it's being sort of dotted or placed aesthetically around larger plates and in little swirls or zigzag patterns, you know, in various combinations of things like that. And oftentimes they're set down with the chef in mind that you will be attracted to the flow of the pattern, I'm imagining, and you will eat things in that sort of flow that you might follow it from a left to right pattern or you might dart around the plate if it looks like it's creating a loose star shape, so maybe you'll follow the points of that star eating at the top and the bottom and the left and the right and the other top. Whatever it is that they're trying to create, they're trying to do that with the colors and the textures. They're trying to, you know, seduce you, so to speak, with that beautiful plating, you know, that you'll follow along in some sort of a pattern. And oftentimes it's probably presented in such a way that it wouldn't really even matter if you follow the pattern, because they've thought about the flavors so carefully that everything there is going to go, you know, together, because that's the whole idea. I mean, without a doubt, you know, chefs are thinking about how they're plating the food from, you know, from long before, during, while they're preparing it, when they're purchasing it. All of those things come into consideration when they're thinking about how they're going to plate up their foods. You know, they're either shopping in the farmer's market or however they do their, you know, they get their source their products, and they're thinking about those sorts of things. And then the process. You know, pork belly is a real popular dish that people like to make, and popularly often served in perfect little cubes. So that's, they think about that. They think about what it's going to take. What do they need to do to end up with a perfect little cube of the pork belly? And you're not going to get that by just popping it in the oven, pulling it out of the oven, cutting it up, and putting it on your plate. Because it's not going to work like that. It's not going to be that perfect. There's a longer process. You're going to cook it. You're going to let it completely chill. You're going to get it cold in the fridge. It's going to solidify. You're going to then take your very sharp knife. You're going to cut it into the perfect portions that you want it, how you want it to look exactly. Then you're going to reheat it or continue the cooking process, finish it in however manner you were planning on doing it. And in that way, you will end up absolutely perfect looking cube of pork belly. Whereas had you just taken it out, let it rest a little bit and cut it, it's not going to have that same beautiful look to it. So the plating and all that, the ideas are, you know, you have to think about all that from the get-go. And colors. I cook with color. I like to say that all the time. That's one of my things. I cook with color, cook in color. I like to have colorful things, and I like to have those colors be balanced on the plate. And there's ways that you can do that with also, once again, artistic concepts, color theory. Think some colors just naturally go together. They just look really good side by side. And if you're beginning to do this and you're just not sure, then look at a prism. Get a prism, you know, those little rainbow things, and look at the colors. And you can see what colors are side by side each other in the prism, and then what colors are on opposite ends of each other on that prism. So say you have a prism, and let's just go through that those colors right now. Colors of the rainbow, and on one end you have the reds, and on the other end you have the blues and the purples. Okay, so that's just basically how it is. And then they have the gradations of that in between. Okay, now, with that in mind, you have the colors that are side by side. They blend, they look okay together. Then you've got the colors on the opposite ends. They're opposite, but they also go well together because they create that necessary tension, I guess, that just makes them look good together. You know, you will see that, and it might just make you a little bit, give you some weird emotional feeling, but it's still evoking a feeling in you. So, you just study that, figure that out, figure out how the colors are going to work for you. Reds and greens, you know, when you go into the grocery store, and you're noticing in the meat department, if you're a meat eater, if you notice in the meat department that they've got a lot of those fake green grass, fake green stuff around. And there's a reason for that. Because green and red complement each other. Green things make reds look more red, and red green things look more green. So when you see the meat, it looks just rich and red because it's right next, you know, they've kind of positioned it in that fake greenery stuff, and that's making it look more red. All right, this can get very complicated. It can get confusing. But if you just let's just go back to just plating a little bit and the simplicity of plating. Columns on a plate now, like lines, linear things, those are becoming more popular. In the entree world and in salads and things like that, you know, you have a lot of options. But in the dessert world is where you really have an enormous amount of options that you can do things with. And that's a lot more complicated. You know, you've got the ornate shreds of chocolate or sugar sculptures and things like that. And that really, you know, can just get really, really, really ornate and almost, it's difficult. It's an art. You know, people do go to culinary school to learn those sorts of things. If you ever get a chance to take a cruise, you'll notice that the people that work on these cruise ships are very skilled at this sort of thing, the ornate desserts and things like that that they do. Typically, you know, the entrees and that, they're following patterns, and it's not necessarily as attractive, but it's in the desserts that they really will shine, or ice sculptures, or fruit and vegetable carving, or butter. They'll make these amazing things out of butter. But that's not plating. Plating is a whole other thing of that. Anyway, I'm off on tangents. Just rambling. Beautiful day in New York. I would love to be able to show pictures and show people how to do this. I'm hoping that it's inspiring you to, on some level, to want to work on that. I don't really know how any other way. You know, the squeeze bottles are very helpful if you want to put little dollops of sauce here and there. How you swirl the sauce with a spoon. You could use paint it on with a paintbrush. There's a number of ways that people apply sauce. You know, you could just put a spoonful of the most simple way that I do all the time with red chili. I use a lot of red chili, and I'm plating things with red chili, and it's a, you know, it's a common, popular thing for me to eat and people in the Southwest, and it's going to be more and more popular all over the place. But people aren't going to go for a heavily decorated chili presentation because people want to eat a lot of that stuff. They're not going to want to eat just like 7 dots on a plate. So I'll put a big ladleful on the bottom of a plate. And as common as that may sound to you and as simple as that sounds, that's actually not how people eat chili. People eat chili by putting the food down that they want to eat and then covering it with chili. And they just load it on. And it's just natural. That's how they want to do it, and that's how people eat it, and that's how it's, you know, considered good all the time. But a unique and a creative approach to this is putting the chili down underneath and then putting the items on top of that chili. And you'd just be surprised if you tried that sort of thing at home with things that you do. You know, what's normal? Gravy on top of the potatoes, gravy on top of the meat. What would be different? Put the gravy down first and then put everything on top of that. If you wanted then, if you had, say, a big ladleful of gravy on the bottom of your plate and you had other flavors that you wanted to add, say a basil oil or you had some sort of paprika or you did have some chili or something, you could then use your squirt bottle and put some of those in there, and if you wanted to with a toothpick, you could swirl it around and make little designs or patterns like you've seen in on soups. And you see this, baristas do this all the time with your cappuccino. They'll make really nice, interesting patterns. So you could do that very simply yourself with gravy. Put the gravy down and then put your things on top. And if you wanted to go with a layering or a stacking, which is a very easy thing to do, go ahead and do that. You don't want to load up the plate. You're not just putting, you know, massive spoonfuls of everything on top of your plate. You're trying to do it in a nice proportion so that it looks good. You know, you don't need an enormous amount of food to feel satisfied. You know, if you have, say, for instance, 4 ounces of potatoes, 4 ounces of your protein, another 3 ounces of, say, a veggie, and say 3 ounces of, oh, I don't know, something else, you've got, what is that, almost a pound of food right there. That's a lot. That's, you know, that's quite a bit to eat in one sitting. You know, those of you that go to popular fast food places, their big burger is only a quarter pound. So eating a whole pound is quite a bit. So you want to think about size and proportion. Hey, we have a caller the last couple minutes of the show. Hey, caller.
Hey, caller, how's it going?
Pretty good. How's it going? Hey, Geraldine, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. I was just listening to your show, and I was perusing your website and listening to how you were talking about stacking and red chili and columns and getting really good ideas just from the verbiage into your picture. So it was a good way for me to kind of see.
Well, you know, that brought up a very important point. I guess I probably should have given people websites and that kind of information so they
Absolutely.
Could look at things while they listened. But you know
right.
what? Here we are.
Talking
glad.
About, you were talking about the red chili, and then I saw you had a big pan of that beautiful red chili, and then you had the enchiladas, which were stacked. So, again, really good ideas, but listening to you and being able to see the pictures together, really helpful.
Well, that's a really good point. And I know you and I know we're both from New Mexico.
Right.
You know that, well, with enchiladas, there's no way around the chili. You have to just sort of put it on. But you know how it works. You know that
yeah,
people
absolutely.
Just put their food down and then just load on the chili.
Right.
You know,
and
that's a good way to
do
it, but
it's
opposite of having it underneath, right?
Exactly. And we do it a little different at our house. My mom literally will get the corn tortillas, and she will soak them. And then she does a short, or like very short stack with minimal on the inside, you know, with the queso. And then she'll pour a little over, and then she stacks the tomatoes and the onions. And we're going to do squash blossoms this year because I saw that new one. That looks delicious. But we usually do. And we like to use a cabbage.
Oh, that sounds tasty. Well, you know what? I have a feeling that because our parents are probably within the same generation, that little soaking thing came about with them, because my mom does that also. And
oh, okay.
I remember when she first kind of discovered it. We hadn't done it that way probably when I was maybe 5 or 8 or 10 years old, but I did
right.
notice she started doing it when I was maybe around 13 or 14. And,
right.
and that it'd be interesting to find out the origin of that particular thing, because we didn't really do it like that before. And when I saw my mom dunking them in, I even remember she said something like, I heard someone did this, or I saw someone did this, and it just made the most sense. I do it that way too now. I've only
right.
done it that way since then.
And,
but I do remember that
my
that
mother,
changed.
My mother learned from, because she has some Native American blood, and we used to go up to the Pueblos, and when the Native Americans from the Pueblo, they don't make it with corn tortillas. They make them with flour tortillas. And they literally, they just submerge that entire flour tortilla into it roll, and then they roll it like a rolled enchilada. So that's where my mother learned it. Very interesting. Yeah. All the Pueblos, this is the time of the year when all the Pueblos are having fiestas, and you know, you can walk into any home in any Pueblo and they'll feed you. So you get to taste all the different arrays of everyone's cooking that lives in all the Native American Pueblos here. So.
No, you know, and that's a really nice thing that I miss, and that's something that people, you know, here in the Northeast, where I live now, don't get to experience that. But, you know, if anybody gets a chance to go out to New Mexico during this time of year and you happen to just know somebody, you know, Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, it's more so in New Mexico. But you can just, it's an open door, you know, to just come on in. There's always stuff on the pot there that there's always going to be food. And, you know, and it's just a sort of a New Mexico thing. And I'm sure, you know, my mom is the same way, even though we're not Native American. I mean, you could easily just go to my parents' house and my mom will just make you some enchiladas if you want, you know? It's just the way it is. Anyway, well, thanks for calling. We're out of time. I do appreciate the call. Thank you, Geraldine. We'll see everybody next week. I hope you got some good ideas. Jeff Christo signing off. Bye-bye.
When you thought radio was safe. A new kind of radio is on its way. Food, music, and friends. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 365 days a year. Coming in 2014.